We kick off the second hour with a really special guest, a certified pop, soul, rhythm, and blues legend who's been making great music for nearly six decades now, a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. His remarkable journey is covered in a new book entitled Little Anthony, My Journey, My Destiny, and we're thrilled to welcome Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Little Anthony to Downtown. Good afternoon, Anthony.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Kimball. Am I saying it right, Kimball?
Just Kimball.
From Brooklyn, we say Kimball.
Kimball, just Rich is fine. Rich is good.
That's good. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
I want to talk about your remarkable career and how it started on the streets of Brooklyn back in the day, and how one of the great legendary record men of all time, George Goldner, had an influence on your not only your career but your style by encouraging you to really enunciate your vocals.
Yeah, he did. That's Mr. George Goldner. And I was a very young man of about 17 years old. And, still in high school. And it's a long story. A lot of that's in the book, so it kind of gets into detail. But he did. And if your audience don't know who he is, he was the president of Gone and End Records, which was one of the most premier independent record companies at that time. And they had a lot of great people on their label. They had the Flamingos, they had Isley Brothers, quite a few other people, and myself and the guys, and when we signed with them. So he was an interesting man, and I'm glad you said that. He's actually one of the last, I think Clive Davis is the last, we call the record men, who not only was a president of a record company, but they did everything themselves. They were hands-on. You know, it's like they almost handed out the records. They got in the car and went to distribution and, you know, that kind of thing. They were very hands-on. And because of that, I like to feel that a lot of great stuff came out of that era, the late 50s and 60s, because of that. And Barry Gordy's the same way. He's the last of the cats that had his hand into everything. Today it's all very sanitized. It's another world. It's different. But he was the one that, yeah, actually told me, why don't I sing like I talk? And we were in the studio at the time, doing just the kind of the people in the world. And we needed a B-side. And the song that was presented to him, he didn't like. And but he had this song written by Sylvester Bradford and Al Lewis called Tears on My Pillow. So in the process of recording it, he would say, wait a minute, you know, take one, take two, take three. He says, you know, Anthony, who's your favorite singer? Well, I belted out Ella Fitzgerald, blah, 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 and this one and that one, Frank Sinatra, and Nat Cole. He says, you know, Nat Cole enunciates everything. And he clearly says the words. Can you do that? I think I can. And that was the beginning of the sound that I have today.
Well, you come out of that great tradition with people like the Crows, the Moonglows, your good friend Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers, the Penguins. Mm-hmm. But you've always said it's not doo-wop. That's not a real thing. It's street corner singing, right?
No. There's no the doo-wop. I don't know where. Well, actually, it came from this jockey in New York City in 1973 who was trying to explain to his audience that era. And he couldn't think of anything. So he thought, oh, well, doo-wop music, because he was inanimate with those groups that came out of the Bronx and Staten Island and Jersey, like the Dupree's, the Elegants, and all that kind of thing. And their background singers, they couldn't emulate the black singers and singing groups and get that soul feeling. That's R&B. It's strictly R&B. And they couldn't do it, so they created their own sound, which is cool. And like you can hear the backgrounds of some of the groups, Ba 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 Varan, or Doo Wop A Doo Wop A Doo. And what happened with Mr. Gossage, he brought stroke to everything. So all of a sudden, we're all in the same bag. And I could talk about the late Bobby Lester. And many of them are not here anymore. And I feel like I'm the last cat. I'm the last of the Indians. And I can speak up and say no such thing. No, we were R&B soul singers.
We're talking to the legendary Little Anthony here on Downtown. So many great hits through the 50s and 60s. You mentioned Tears on My Pillow, Hurt So Bad, Going Out of My Head. I'm on the outside looking in. With all that success, the road was not an easy place for people of color in the 1960s. And what a lot of folks might not even know is the racism and the segregation wasn't limited to the South. There were a lot of northern venues that were forced to have segregated audiences.
Well, I don't remember, actually, Rich, any segregated audiences in the North, but I do remember the subtle segregation. I mean, it was subtle. I mean, I was in Madison, Wisconsin, and I just felt that I was uncomfortable. That was then. Don't get me wrong. Madison, Wisconsin has grown up, and they figured it out, and they know that that's not what they want to be. But basically, in the South, yes, below the Mason-Dixon line, and once you cross Baltimore and you go down, it gets really weird. And when I played places like Alabama, Mississippi, it was brutal. I mean, I didn't. When you're talking about a kid of 17, 18, he's taken out of Brooklyn, New York, where it's a melting pot. I mean, all my friends were Jewish, Italian, and we all lived in the same neighborhood. So I didn't understand, why would anybody don't like me, you know? Mm. And my mother, who was from Savannah, Georgia, and my dad, who was from Charleston, South Carolina, tried to prepare me. You're gonna hear things, you're going to see things that isn't normal. But you just do your gut job and just come home. I'm home safe, you know? And that's basically what I did, but I was very, very unhappy. Thank goodness for some of the performers and artists that were out there in the road, like Laverne Baker and Bo Diddley and just so many of them that helped me, and I'm sure a lot of other young artists, to deal with that. Because we thought, oh, it's going to be fun. We're going to do the Dick Clark Show. We're going to be on TV. We're going to sing, and we're going to make money. We didn't know we had to go down in that situation. So that period of time in my life was quite illuminating, to say the least.
You talk about it a lot in your book. Can you explain for us, Anthony, what it was, how you came to your faith, and how it helped you get through some of the tough times along the road?
My mom and my dad, you know, my mother was a gospel singer, and her sisters, they sang together, and they were called the Nazareth Baptist Gospel Singers. And as a Christian lady, she tried to bring up her children that way. And I wasn't excluded. And we used to go to a church in New York City called the Nazareth Baptist Church, which is really like a storefront church in New York City. And that is where I was raised. And I used to go to church in the morning, out at night. I mean, but the good part about it was that we got a lot of food. That's the only way they kept them in church. They fed everybody. But I don't regret it. It was a wonderful experience that I learned from that. But what it did was introduce me to my faith, who I am. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I don't know. I don't really care anymore. At my age, I'm 74. I'm just telling people. I'm not trying to sell anything or convert people. You want to know who I am? That's who I am. And that's the very thing I believe in the bottom of my heart saved my life.
Your book is called My Journey, My Destiny. So many people that you worked with that you knew well did not make it through, did not survive. Frankie Lyman, Sam Cooke, no. Johnny Ace, so many more. Was it your destiny to be out there making people happy, bringing joy to their lives all these years?
You know, in the book I put in the front, it comes from the Old Testament, the Old Covenant. It's Jeremiah, and he says, I knew you in your mother's belly. And I really believe that that was laid out before I was even born. Now, I didn't do anything to stay on the track. No. I was in this world. It was fun. And somebody asked me, oh, you must have been miserable. Oh, you're a sinner. All the problems you had. No. It was really a lot of fun, you know. But even in those days, I knew there was something missing. And I thank God for my mother and my aunts and those lovely, God-fearing people who put the pieces of character in me. And then it bolstered my beliefs as I became an older person. As I got older, and now I look back and say, oh, thank you, guys. You know, and that's why I try to do it with my children and my grandchildren, to pass on this wonderful gospel thing that, you know, it's not religion. I leave religious to religious people. I'm talking about a relationship, and that's what really I tried to write in the book. I didn't stay on it. I didn't, you know, spend a lot of time, but I did say, This book is part history, part redemption.
And your family has always been so important to you. You give them credit for giving you a stable upbringing, and that's continued now. On the other side, where your kids, your grandchildren are so important to you that while you're still out on the road, it seems like you can't wait to get home and see those grandkids.
Absolutely right. I got one of my grandchildren, my son Daniel and his wife, Regan, they have a company. They start a business. So a lot of times they live here in Las Vegas. You know, they don't have nowhere to, you know, it's hard to get babysitters or get it, well, stuff like that. But, you know, it's always easy to know that your mother and father's there. But I'm going to trust my kids. I'm my mother and father. So we tendently watch the kids a lot. And last night they were in here. And one of them, he's named Orion. He's the sweetest little thing. He'll be 2 years old if I let him in December. And for some reason, he's attached himself to me. And everywhere I go and anything I say, he starts repeating it, you know. So I have to be real careful with that kid. And all of them, each one of them are unique. And each one of them, as my children have learned, you know, we teach them, you know, to have that basis of who they are and not to be wandering. Unfortunately, so many kids today, you know, they have one parent families, and God bless the women that raise a lot of these children on their own. God bless them. My daughter Sarah's one of those, and we're helping her out. The family steps in and helps. She has a support system, but many people out there, especially in urban areas, they don't. So it really has become a very situation to raise your children. So God bless. But I did come from a very stable family. Aunts, you know, cousins. And I tried to, with the fun that I had with them. And those character-based things have stayed with me all these years. And now they've taken hold. They've taken root. They've rooted. And the fruit of it is starting to show now in my senior years. So I'm enjoying life now. This is the best. You know, my best years ahead of me, and I'm enjoying more now. Life itself, without all that baggage, with all those issues, are gone. You know, and now I can enjoy myself really at my age. My wife and I actually are moving to Florida so we can go fishing and just do things that we wanted to do for years. That we raised all our children, so it's time for us. It's time for us.
We're talking with Little Anthony. His new book is entitled My Journey, My Destiny. In 2009, you were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You've had acclaim from so many of the great artists, people like Paul McCartney, who've looked up to you forever. Did you ever imagine that it would go this way, growing up in the streets of Brooklyn?
No, because the whole thing with me was when you sang, girls will come around. You know, at that age, your libido is jumping, you know, so you want to know, oh, you mean tell me if I sing, girls like that, and they hang around you, you become very popular. So that was the motivation in the beginning as a young man. And you must understand at 14, 15, 16 years old, that's very normal. So, yeah, I never started out thinking, oh, I'm going to be in the business for 60 years, so I better start planning now. No, never thought of that at all.
Well, it's a delight to talk with you, Little Anthony. The book is wonderful. The career still going strong, still performing and sounding as great as ever. We're so grateful for you making some time for us. Continued success and good health to you. And thanks again for being with us.
Thank you very much, Rich, and to your audience. Thank you.
20 minutes after 5 o'clock on Downtown. Little Anthony, it's a wonderful book, a great read, and as you can tell, what a great positive approach to life for a guy who's achieved so much success over these last six decades. It is 20 after 5 on Downtown. Still to come, we'll talk some